And welcome to the Tales from Alarm Box podcast. This is episode 150. Actually, that's 152.
152.
I got the number wrong on the sheet here. Spotlight on DC Comics Martian Manhunter number 1 from 1998. So that would be the first series that they put together.
Second?
Oh, my bad.
There was a miniseries.
That's right. This was a...
Jones and Eduardo Barreto, I think.
Is that right? Okay.
I think so.
That sounds about right.
Pretty sure it was Gerard Jones.
Yeah, and this was going on about the time of Grant Morrison's JLA. Look. Actually, loved that book.
Where did you say, ugh?
Yes.
Oh, man, that was so good.
I'm glad you liked it.
I don't know how far along we are, but... But, yeah, it's... in fact, I've read through it, looked through it. It's... man, there's some spooky art in here. Mandrake knows how to do the spooky.
Yes, he does.
Fan of his. We'll have to post the episode on... well, it depends on if we, you know, kill it or not. Because I think I'm on both their Facebooks, so... Even talked to Ostrander a couple of times. Anyway.
Ooh.
Told me to get off my duff and start writing.
There you go.
There you go. All right.
Which I met him one time.
Yeah.
San Diego, many, many moons ago.
Mm-hmm.
This is right after his wife, Kim Yale, died.
Oh.
So, and it was like weeks after that. He still showed up for San Diego, so.
That's a dedication right there.
So 1988, Martian Manhunter.
98.
This is that was by J.M. DeMatteis and Mark.
Oh, the other series you're talking about.
Oh, DeMatteis. Okay.
Okay.
Who was the artist?
Mark Badger.
Hmm. Really?
That's according to the comicbookdb.com.
What was it about?
Was it four issues. It was four issues.
It was about four issues. Mm-hmm. Was it set in the, like, 1950s? Was it filled with beatniks?
Let me see if it's got any information on here at all. In the,
I'm looking for it on ComicDB here. Okay. It
doesn't give any synopsis here. It just says...
four-issue series, yeah.
It had Batman, Black Canary, Booster Gold... Blue Beetle, Captain Adam. So this was the time of JLE. Or not
yeah.
JLI. JLI.
Yeah.
Oh, then there was another one, and I don't know if it came out before this series.
There was. Yeah, there was more than... There was another Martian Manhunter limited series in 06.
This was the one that established him looking all funkadelic, I think, with the stretched out head and stuff.
Yeah.
No, I'm thinking of one... Where, yeah, it takes place in the 50s. It's, I don't, oh, I think it's like a three-issue prestige format. I can almost picture the cover. It's out there.
You mean the actual, what happened in the 50s is what you're saying?
Yeah, like it took, it Yeah, it took place, well, yeah, in the 50s, I think. Mm-hmm. Not written in the 19th, but written. Oh, it's out there. I'm Googling it. I'm finding it. No, I'm not Googling it. I'm going to go to my thing.
Hey, kid show.
Well, okay.
Sorry, I didn't mean to derail, but I was just...
No, that's fine.
No, I'm totally Googling it. It exists. Martian.
Hey, that's
man. Fun. Gerard Jones. Eduardo Barreto. And let's see what comes up.
I'm actually interested to find hear this.
Ah, Martian Manhunter, American Secrets, book one of three.
Huh. Oh, there it is. It's actually there, listed 1992.
There we go. Phew.
Yeah, I see it. Sure enough.
Points for Murray for vague
memory reference. Bring a series I didn't even buy but felt I should have.
Yep, 48 pages. You're right.
It was Gerard Jones, so what are you going to do?
I'll be doggone. Yeah, it doesn't really tell you much about it at all, does it?
All it needs to tell you is that I remembered it.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. Okay!
Congratulations, Murray, on the vague. Actually, we got an 8.2 out of 10 on Comic Book DB. Anyhow, but yeah. This one, you got this one covered, Murray, or you want me to do it?
Sure, man. No, I can do it.
Absolutely.
Let me just call it up on the reader thingy. All right. I'm zooming back to the beginning.
And we got John Ostrander in, is it Tim or Tom? Tom Mandrake.
Tom Mandrake, yep.
Two of my favorite creators right there.
Mm-hmm. This is before Martian Manhunter went all weird costume.
Yeah.
Yes.
That squishy head.
No, I think this was after Squishy Head, because he did the Squishy Head thing again. That was in JLI. There was that miniseries, again, the one that I referenced, when he was living in the brownstone in New York City.
Oh, yeah.
The JLI headquarters there.
Yeah.
And it has that moment where Batman walks in on him. Sorry.
No, that's cool.
You're right.
Because we all know that only nerds that are virgins know who Martian Manhunter is. You heard that quote from Goyer, didn't you?
Yes.
David Goyer was quoted as saying that about, which is silly because he was in a Justice League cartoon and a lot of kids know who he is. Well, so anyway, sorry.
That says a lot about David Goyer himself since he knows who Martian Manhunter is. So.
Yeah. Which I'm shocked that he would say something like that, but whatever.
Ah, well.
You don't necessarily have to like the person to like the work. Just look at John Byrne. All right, enough derailing.
Okay.
Continue.
So, we are now in Denver. It's taking place in Denver, the Mile High City. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Yes.
Really?
The elevation is a little it's really close to a mile or a little bit over.
Huh. Wow. Things you learn. Alrighty, so it's nighttime in Denver, and some poor old homeless dude is wandering. wandering through his alley, worried about the rats nibbling on his toes, which would be gross.
Yeah, that is something to be concerned about.
But really, he's got more things to be concerned about, because there's this big red
spider-y looking thing.
Looks like a spider thing, but it's all metal, I think.
Yeah, the next 2 pages over is one of the creepiest things I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, the spider thing jumps out at him. He's screaming, and then we go meet two cops, who are not going to have a good ending.
No?
They hear the noise. They see the big flash of light, and these two police officers go to investigate. And, of course, the old officer doesn't want to investigate because he's, what does he say, 2 weeks from retirement? No.
Yeah.
A few months from retirement.
A few months to pitch.
And the young guy's all like, no, we got to go. We're like, well, it doesn't matter what he's thinking they're going to be like, because a second later they're chopped up in pieces. And we see the spidery creature holding the homeless man's head, and the spidery creature has taken sat itself down on the now empty neck of the homeless guy.
Yeah, and shoved its legs through the chest and sticking out. That's so creepy looking.
Yeah,
I was like, whoa, when I was turning through the pages for the first time. That's something else, man.
Mandrake rocks.
So. Yeah, he does. That's going to be creepy no matter what, but with him doing it, it's like 10 times creepier, I think.
with the shading.
He's one of my favorites.
Yeah, there's some panels in here that look very Gene Colan-y.
Yeah, I can see that.
I was just about to say the what was that Night? What was that DC series? Night, the Baron Winter and
Night Force,
which was Gene Colan, but
yeah,
could just as easily have been done by Mandrake.
Yeah,
this is true. They share a similar style.
This is true.
Mm-hmm. So we go back to Denver. Well, we haven't really left, but we go to the police station in Denver. And we meet John Jones, who is the alter ego of Martian Manhunter, and he explains that this is one of the many alter egos he's got scattered throughout the world, which I think is kind of a neat little element to get added to Martian Manhunter's story there. Like,
they've tried to explore that a couple times, and I like what it's a cool thing here, where he was a real person when he first arrived on Earth. And he spent a year watching him, learning about the planet. And when he was killed, he just took his identity over. I think that's kind of, it's cool and yet creepy at the same time.
Yeah. And that's exactly what he tells us. He gives us that short little history. And then he explains that where John Jones was a police officer, he thought it would be simpler if he could do his own thing. So he went into the private detective business and left the force so that John Jones could, you know, do his own thing and turn into a Martian when he needed to, and I guess set up all these other identities around the globe.
Yep.
However, as an ex-police officer, he's still got contacts on the force, and he goes to the force to talk to one of his old homicide buddies and get the lowdown on this headhunter creep that's prowling and preying on the poor old homeless people. And this scene actually is kind of cool, because it took me a couple of panels to clue into what he's doing, but Martian Manhunter is interviewing the officer, and the officer is giving him kind of all this information that John Jones is pretending he has all this information, but really he's just kind of reading it off of the guy's brain, because John Jones is like, he can do everything. And one of the things he can do is read people's minds. So he explains how he's asks the officer some leading questions and then just kind of reads his mind and picks out the answers and then pretends as if he already knew those that information, which is kind of cool.
And the idea that he is so freaking powerful is how they're playing him in New DC, the New 52.
Oh, yeah, I think his power level's really increased. Because he took on the whole JLA.
Yeah.
He's always been... I mean, they've never really... Maybe they haven't really played... But, I mean, he's always been powerful. Like,
yeah, but his vulnerability to fire made him not... I don't know, down a level a little bit, but I don't think they've... he doesn't have that vulnerability in the New 52, I don't think. I've never seen it used. Have any of you?
I haven't seen enough of them in the New 52. I don't think it's there, but...
It's never been mentioned in anything I've read. So anyway.
Alrighty. So then we kind of do, is it a flashback, I guess, or a flash forward?
Something. Yeah, it's just like, it looks like to me, yeah, it just looks like this, you know.
Because we get a scene of him dealing with the Beastie as a John Jones, or Martian Manhunter turns himself into, takes on the appearance of a homeless dude. And right. Acts as a lure for this red spider creature.
Because it is preying on the hobos.
Yeah, who then comes out and zaps them.
Yeah.
And then we kind of flash back to the police officer, and we get a little more details about this. So we're kind of flashing between the two scenes. manager.
Yeah, that, oh, I didn't notice that before. With, that's kind of weird.
Yeah. So he's duking it out at the same time. Well, not at the same time, but we're reading it at the same time as he's mm-hmm. getting the information from the police officers. Let me see. So they know that this creature is picking on, eating, taking the heads off of homeless people. And the police officers are planning to take all the street people into protective custody, but Martian Manhunter figures that's not going to solve the problem. It'll just make the creature or whatever it is mm-hmm. wander off and go to another town, and mm-hmm. he wants to stop it. So he drifts around and he turns himself into a homeless person, and then the fighting begins. The little red creature crawls out of a garbage bin and I guess zaps him with like a laser in the eye. Eventually he takes out the vision in both of Martian Manhunter's eyes, but yeah. Does that stop him? No, he still dukes it out and
yeah.
takes the beastie down.
This happened right after DC 1 million, it looks like.
Yeah, there's some... Yeah, there's a comment there where he makes...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he talks about... he'd heard about these killings, and he was deciding he needed to investigate all these strange events because recent events with Vandal Savage had taught him not to ignore such things. Mm-hmm. And I guess Vandal Savage was in DC 1 million?
Yeah.
I'm kind of fuzzy on the details for that one.
Yeah, it's been a while. He was one of the ones behind it, you know, because he's immortal and he was working with that living sun and all that stuff.
Gotcha.
I think I have a trade of that. That was a good series, though.
Yeah. It's a good way of just kind of grounding this series in the ongoing DCU without
mm-hmm.
without hammering your head, you know, yeah. like you. If you read DC 1 million, then that's mm-hmm. a little bit of a doodly-doo for you. And if you didn't, well, it doesn't really matter because it's just a little tiny paragraph.
It's a doodly-doo?
It's a doodly-doo.
Holy moly.
I know. We get to see all of the Martian Manhunter's abilities here. He's like...
Yeah, he's doing the whole thing.
Vision. He's going invisible. He's turning himself intangible and dropping through the ground and then popping back up. He is one powerful dude.
Yeah, he is.
And even though blinded, he squashes the bug.
Mm-hmm.
Which is called the Headman, by the way.
The Headman.
Oh, yeah, that's later on, yeah. I do believe this is a robot.
Oh, yeah, it looks like. Yeah. It looks like, but maybe there's more to it.
No, yeah.
The Justice League will know.
It hit him in the other eye and blinded him good. And he yeah. smashed the crap out of it.
Yep, he whams it. Wham, 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 wham.
And then he went to the moon.
Yes. GLA he gets teleported watchtower. Up to the watchtower on the moon. And Green Lantern, Kyle Rayner, the cool Green Lantern.
I liked him. I started reading GL again when he came on.
Yeah, he's kind of cool.
Yeah. So the first costume he had with the crab mask.
Yeah, that's what this one is.
So, anyway.
Alrighty. Green Lantern gives Martian Manhunter the old medical checkup and says his eyes should be fine soon. He shouldn't use his heat vision for a few days. He should rest. He should relax. And the Martian Manhunter says, well, I'm not relaxing.
And he liked your terminology. Green Lantern calls that machine a doohickus.
Yeah, see? He knows what he's talking about.
That's pure Ostrander. I mean, he knows how to distinguish his characters by dialogue. I mean,
oh, yeah, absolutely. You can definitely tell the difference between those two characters.
Yeah, if I'm reading the doohickus right and the Frillinger is online okay, see? Perfect. That totally explains it. Mm-hmm. And then there's this weird little scene that is clearly set and stuff up for the future, but Green Lantern asks Martian Manhunter if he's feeling depressed, and John says, nope, I'm angry, I want to stop the killings, but I'm not really depressed. Why are you asking? And Green Lantern says, oh, no, no, I'm just asking. And Martian Manhunter walks away saying, you're a strange young man.
Yeah, okay. And then he's thinking to himself, a thought balloon. How I missed them.
I know. Yeah. And Green Lantern says, well, I have this message that I'm supposed to give you from your future self. I guess I have to wait to give it to you. Mm-hmm. Which I'm guessing is setting something up for the future.
Well, there was something in the 1 million issue.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. There you go. Then you get a lovely little scene.
That's awesome. I just read about Flash.
With Flash, yeah. Flash is on monitor duty, and he's grumpy because he has to take monitor duty right after Aquaman, and Aquaman always scratches up the board with that harpoon of his, and the seat smells of carp. That's totally Wally.
Yeah.
This was at a time when DC was doing fun yet dark at the same time. I mean,
and it is possible.
Freaking Peter David had this guy's hand eaten off, but it was still a fun book.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was a very fun book. I mean, Aquaman was a grump for sure, but but the book was fun.
Yeah. I enjoyed this era of the Justice League a lot. I've read it all the way up till it ended, right after they did that little sequel to Identity Crisis.
This has got to be probably around when Wade was at his height on Flash. Obviously,
yeah,
Rainer and just getting the ring. I mean, so on and so forth. But JL, and like you said, this was Grant Morrison's JLA or JL. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Steel was part of it.
Yeah.
Or was that when they expanded? Because it was just the 7 at first, wasn't it?
He came in pretty early in Morrison's run.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've got a lot of those trades. They've reprinted them all in deluxe editions. I'd like to get those sometime.
Ooh, and Oracle, too. Goodness.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Steel. Next page.
Yeah. Steel is investigating the big red robot thing. And what does he say? He was shown a model of what? Oh, he's examined the remains of the device, and Steel says he knows exactly what it is. He was shown a theoretical model years ago. It was the work of a brilliant young scientist named Thaddeus Romero Hoskins, but no one has seen or heard of Hoskins since. And John asks Wally to contact Oracle and see if she can figure out where this Hoskins dude could be. And then we get a little more explanation from Steel. Hoskins was this young, brilliant, rich dude with absolutely no people skills, very arrogant, a bit of an elitist. And he says the headman was designed as a military weapon. The concept was to turn enemy soldiers into our side's cannon fodder. Steel says it's ingenious, but morally repulsive.
Yeah, I'll have to agree with that.
Mm-hmm. He said, never heard of it going to prototype before this.
Man, don't let the Bush administration hear about that there. They'd be using that right now if they were still in power.
Yep, Oracle pops in and she lets them all know that Hoskins is dead.
Pizza.
Mm-hmm. And John Johns is, are you certain? How reliable is your little report? And she says it's bankable. He arrived as a John Doe. The medical examiner ran his fingerprints as part of the autopsy. Here's the ghoulish part. His brain was missing and the head was detached from the body, probably with a laser.
Mm-hmm.
Mmm. And then Steel says there's something else you should know. There was a human brain inside this creature. That's what makes the headman work and makes it so immoral. Maybe Hoskins was the first victim of his own creation, a Frankenstein. And John says, maybe, possibly. He's going to go to Denver, and he's going to talk to the street people, and he's figuring that whoever's behind this is taking the street people to make more headmen. So he's going to stay mentally in contact, and Oracle is to check the Denver vicinity, and he's looking for an area that has a great deal of power, has its own power supplies, and he figures that Oracle will find that, tell it to Wally, and Wally will relay it to John Johns through telepathic links, I guess.
Mm-hmm. John Johns, you keep saying, I always thought John Jones. Is it John Johns?
Oh, you know what, it probably is John Jones.
I always thought it was, pronounced the same as his, that alter ego, Jones.
It probably totally is.
I've heard it both,
I just...
That's no help, Chris, whatsoever.
I know, I'm just,
Take a side, pick a side.
I always say Jones,
Fine. I'm just calling them after.
It's all right, it's your Canadian accent, I'm sure.
That's totally what it is.
All right.
Got a silent U in there or something.
Yeah. Man, my throat is not clear yet.
All
right. All right. So they find a former NORAD installation.
Like you
dubbed the Ark. Yeah, set into the Rockies. Are the Rockies anywhere near Denver?
Yes.
Denver, Colorado.
Yes.
I remember that. There's like mountains there, yeah?
Yeah.
Yes. Are they the Rockies?
Yes.
Really?
Exactly, yeah. Very close.
Their baseball team is the Rockies.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yes.
The Denver Rockies?
Yes. Or Colorado Rockies.
Really?
Yes. Huh.
Alrighty.
You were learning shit that you never thought you would ever need to learn.
I know. The only thing I knew about Denver before this was that, I don't know, I think they went there on an episode of Dynasty like 80 million years ago. Maybe it was set there. I don't remember.
Denver? I don't think Dynasty. Yep. Oh, wait, that's the last page.
Where did they go in Dumb and Dumber? Wasn't it Denver?
It's been so long since I watched that, I wouldn't have any idea.
All right.
So they found this big NORAD installation. It's got its own nuclear power supply. It's supposed to have been shut down years ago. However, these things are never really shut down. Oracle thinks everything is still online, and that's where the Martian Manhunter is going to go. He starts walking through the walls.
Hold on. Sorry. Mork and Mindy was set in Denver.
That's right.
Yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm.
So sorry. I just popped into my head.
You're absolutely right, sir.
Wow.
Sorry.
Nanny Nanu.
Yes.
Alrighty. He goes inside, but keeps himself immaterial just in case, he wants to be on the safe side.
That's what I do. I do the same thing.
Although, he's like Superman, so he's totally invulnerable. Unless someone like lights a match, I guess, and then...
I don't think he's as tough as Superman. I don't know.
He could totally take Superman.
I agree.
Think he could.
He could. He's invisible. He's got mind control. He's got shape-shifting powers. Yeah.
Mm, true.
Supes is just a big, strong man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Got Martian vision.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Alrighty. So he gets inside and he finds that someone is building a spaceship.
Well, if I had an old NORAD installation, that's probably what I would do with it. I don't know about you guys, but...
And it is at that point that someone... realizes Johns is there. Sorry, Jones. John Jones. Jean Jones. I'll say Frenchie. Okay. Anyway, they address him. They want to meet him at the center of the complex and hear out what's being done before he gets all judgy. Mm-hmm. Before you contact the JLA, listen to what we have to say.
And he's that's pretty dumb.
Huh?
Well, he doesn't really agree. He just says, I'm going to come, so.
All
right. Well, he's a more peaceful type than Superman or Batman is, because, you know, first thing Superman does when he's faced with a problem is punch it.
Right.
He's more likely to try to understand what's going on first.
Yeah, that's true. That's one of the differences, for sure.
Even in that fight with that first headman, he even said that. He tries to understand something, and then sometimes it gets him in trouble. And he didn't say that exactly like that, but that's what he meant. But anyway.
That's what he meant. So he follows one of the floating headmen down to the center of the spaceship, and he is welcomed by Thaddeus Romero Hoskins. And if that is who it is, he says, well, Thaddeus Romero Hoskins is dead. I am the headmaster. And we see someone that looks like what these headmen would look like if they had bodies.
Mm-hmm. Kind of Brainiac-like, if you ask me.
Yeah, kind of. It's all hooked in and it's got... Yeah, the wires are all hooked into the ceiling, and it's...
Pre-crisis Brainiac.
Yeah, it has a body where the other headmen don't, but it's standing amidst, like, tons of these little head creatures.
Yeah, that's another really creepy image right there. He does a good job with it. You can see it looks like there's, you know, a good 100 or so around and behind him.
Yeah, everywhere.
Yeah. Mandrake is...
Yes. Mucho creepy.
Yes. So the Martian Manhunter asks why he wants this new body, and the headmaster says this new body, or the old body, wasn't capable of completing his vision, so he created a new one, improving on the work of Will Magnus from the Robot Men. No, not the Robot Men. Metal Men.
Yep. Interesting.
There we go.
Continuity.
Mm-hmm. So he placed his brain into it, and he said, that's not really important. Now that you've discovered me, I have to convince you of the necessity of what I'm doing, or I will have to abandon the base and precious time will be lost. And he gets right into it. He's trying to save humanity. Millennia ago, the Earth was struck by an asteroid from space, and the dominant species, the dinosaur, died out. Sooner or later, it's going to happen again. A virus that cannot be controlled will sweep the Earth. Humanity and civilization will be lost due to a lack of vision and an unwillingness to face the inevitable. We are stranding ourselves on one tiny blue orb. This is the first of several generation ships I hope to construct to take humanity into the stars. I will leave with the first one as the guidance system. My body will become the ship itself. And Martian Manhunter says, so you need a workforce, so you created one out of the unfortunates forced to live on the streets. And he says, well, you know, they're really just riffraff. They don't have any...
That's not going to help your case, man.
Yeah. They serve no use to society. Here, I'm giving them a purpose. In any case, they wouldn't be selected to go to the stars. They're not really what's important here. What is important? Are you going to aid my mission? Are you going to oppose it? Are you a friend or foe to humanity? And of course, John Johns is having none of this. He's like, yeah, I'm a friend of humanity. I'm not helping you. And of course, the headmaster then says, well, you will have to die.
Yeah.
And John Johns, of course, says, not at your hands. And then they start battling.
Yeah, because while they were talking, a bunch of those head crabs decided to come up behind him.
Head crabs.
Well,
I like that.
Crab.
Yeah, that's from, what was that from? Isn't that like Half-Life 2 or Aliens?
Miley Cyrus' head crabs.
Yeah. Aliens, maybe? Yeah, anyway.
Alrighty, so apparently his Martian brain can split itself up amongst tasks. So while he was listening to the headmaster, he was also cataloging what he saw.
Which, you know, we just call that multitasking, but his brain was probably actually literally splitting inside of its head.
Yeah.
But anyway, yes, go ahead, sorry.
Planning it all out, and he realized that the numbers are on the side of the headmen there. So his best hope was in taking the battle directly to the headmaster, and so he grabs him, and they duke it out again. And he figured that the little head creatures wouldn't attack him if he was close to the headmaster, but I guess the headmaster drops him into...
He hits him in the face.
Yeah, he hits him in the face and dumps him into a pile of the little head beasts.
With even some Kirby crackle to go along with it.
Yeah. They kind of swarm him. They try to kill him. And of course, then Martian Manhunter vanishes. But of course, he wasn't trying to escape. He was trying to bury the headman with his own ship. So he...
Yeah, he's lifting.
Yeah, I guess it's like lifting the giant spaceship and getting ready to crash it down on top of everybody.
Yeah, that's a valid strategy, I think.
Absolutely, because the big ship blows up over top of all of them and squashes them. And
great opportunity right there.
Yeah, there are explosions everywhere. Oh, it says here he's not quite as fast as the Flash or Superman. Mm-hmm. But he's fast enough to get out.
I focused on anti-gravitational particles and natural magnetic fields. I wondered if it would be enough. I like this noir vibe we got going on.
Yeah.
Anyway.
excuse me. So then he brings Steel back to the wreckage, just to kind of survey things. And Steel says, well, the dude wasn't entirely wrong. If humanity wants to survive, sooner or later we're going to have to go to the stars. And Martian Manhunter says, I know what it's like to have your species die out. And Martian Manhunter then says, but Hoskins was a killer, and his values are not those I would want to see humanity take to the stars. End of the issue. So a nice little done-in-one.
Eh?
So a quick little background. So first of all, his powers, superhuman strength, speed, senses, and endurance. He's a skilled detective. He's an expert hand-to-hand combatant. He's got shape-shifting, vulnerability, invisibility, telekinesis, intangibility, flight, telepathy, Martian vision, and a genius-level intellect.
Yeah, he's got it all.
It does. He debuted November 1955 in Detective Comics 225 in The Strange Experiment of Dr. Erdell. And if memory serves, John Jones, or Martian Manhunter, was one of the first... he was the first original Silver Age character to come out.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah, he predated the Flash by a little bit.
He's carried over. He's been a mainstay of Justice League on and off over the years. He's been a member also of... Currently a member of Justice League United. Blech, as Murray would say.
You don't like Justice League United?
I do not.
Interesting.
He was obviously he's a member of the DC or the new DCU Stormwatch for a while.
Mm-hmm.
He was a member at one point of the Outsiders briefly. It looks like
that was my biggest disappointment book, I think.
Stormwatch?
Yeah.
I
don't know.
He's been around for quite a long time, and he has never gotten the respect that
not until the Justice League cartoon, I think.
He was awesome in the Justice League cartoon.
Yeah, I love. He's one of my favorites in there.
He was the catalyst for the heroes getting involved in was it Infinite Crisis? When he got killed by the human flame.
That was Final Crisis.
That was Final Crisis, yeah.
No, it was Infinite Crisis. The character. No, you're right. Final Crisis.
Final Crisis. Remember, we read it.
Yes, I do now. It's all coming back to me. Yes. Yeah. Your fault.
Years of therapy is just ruined.
I was all over it until you brought it up again. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, So he has been around for quite some time. He's been a catalyst. He has been the driver. He was in Justice League Detroit. That's when he had just come back to the Justice League at that point. As a matter of fact, it was his people who destroyed the satellite headquarters, which drove them to Detroit.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
So, anyhow, he has been here there. My first real exposure to him, though, on any kind of level, was Justice League 200, when he comes crashing through the wall and attacks Firestorm.
Hmm.
I really didn't know much about the character up to that point. I never heard of him. And then this series, right, you know, along with Spectre by these two guys, just, I had to buy it and I loved it.
Yeah, I can't wait to read that. I need to get that. I think I've already pre-ordered the second Spectre book volume.
And they have those two guys, if you look on Facebook and check it out, they have a, their own self-published thing coming out.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was, but I remember seeing that now.
We'll find out. It deserves a little promotion. John.
Yes, it does.
Fender.
Looking through the Spectre one and more creepiness. I even think they did a Star Wars thing together, but I can't remember.
It's not coming up on the Google. Darn you, the Google, you've failed me once again.
Well, let me see what I can do here.
The Google has dropped the ball.
Let's see, Ostrander. No, that's not it.
Anyhow, he worked on Grimjack as well with Ostrander.
Ah, yes. I have...
And Firestorm.
Yay. I have that. Crap. I just lost it. What you were talking about. I was looking for the other thing. Lost Legends, John F. Stringer, Spectre Omnibus, and Grimjack, yeah. I've got I brought their IDW reprinted all that in two omnibuses. I've got both of them. I've read some of them. It's really good stuff. According to this, I just looked at Wikipedia just all of a sudden. Apparently, he studied theology with the intent of becoming a Catholic priest. Now describes himself as an agnostic. Interesting.
Which? Ostrander?
Yeah. Okay. I believe the guy who plays LeVar Burton, he was studying to be a priest as well, and he...
The man who played LeVar Burton?
No, I was going to say that played Geordi LaForge, but then I remembered his name. So, anyway, I'm trying to find... I don't see anything in here. There's a lot of stuff, though.
I like these guys. So, yay. Good pick.
He writes a weekly column on Comic Mix, too. Good stuff.
There it is.
What'd you find it?
No.
All right. Well, We'll have to find. Before I find it out, I'll put it. We'll put a thing on there.
Out there somewhere.
Anyway, anything else, Sir Murray?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Nope. I got nothing.
You got nothing? All right.
Nothing, man.
You got nothing.
Mind your fucking business.
Oh, I didn't know that. The Kents. They wrote the Kents.
Yes.
That's one I haven't read.
I have it up on my bookshelf right behind me here.
Hmm. Yeah, I need to get that one. That's one of them I haven't got.
He's doing stuff with Straczynski over at Dark Horse.
Yeah, that Sidekick book. I've heard of that. I have a problem getting any kind of series with that he writes, because he just, like, all of a sudden might just say, whoop, I got to do this other thing. I'm not going to go back to it for a year or two. So, you know, that's just me.
Okay.
Just saying. It looks good, though. I read about it.
Kros. KROS.
Huh?
That's the book by Mandrake and Ostringer. KRO.
Really?
It really is.
I'll find a link to it. Damn it. Only on Facebook. Sorry.
All right. Okay.
Okay. I'm done. I got nothing else.
I have nothing else either.
Me either.
All right, then. As always, you can send us an email at podcast@talesfromthelongbox.com. Oh, excuse me. I tried to hold that yawn, and I just couldn't hold it anymore. I'm sorry. I'm tired. Anyway, what else? Yes, Facebook page. Come join us on there. And I'm gonna try to remember to post the episode links and pin it to the top, the latest episode. I don't know if anybody noticed that. I did that earlier today. Come in there and chat with us in there. We talk about the rising prices of books. It's like they're slipping to $3.99 and $4.99 now. At least that's the rumors.
Thanks, Murray, for starting that rumor. That's awesome, man.
No, I actually saw a deal on Bleeding Cool that Marvel, it looked like Marvel was slipping their prices up to $4.99. But they didn't know if it was a permanent thing or not. So it's interesting. All right, and also on the actual episode, you can comment. Let us know what you think. The last episode we did on what was it? One we did on Future's End had over twice as many downloads as usual. Ooh. I thought that was kind of cool.
Ooh, well,
the
done.
Rerun episode had over 50. So, well, that's just on the link on the page. I mean, there's several different things, but anyway. Yeah, that's it for this week. I need a nap. That it? We're done.
I'm pretty sure that's it.
We're out.